Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas with Discover the Finger Lakes at SaberLife.com. And this was, this next week's going to be a very interesting week for the Finger Lakes in terms of wine recognition. Hopefully, the Wine Spectator magazine, which is the sort of the magazine for wine reviews, is going to publish their top 100 wines in the world. And these are, I don't know if they phrase it differently each year, but kind of what they find is the 100 most exciting wines in the world for 2020. It's not necessarily just quality ratings, but they certainly play a huge role. And the Finger Lakes has generally had one, I think even sometimes two wines on this top 100 list, but I think last year there were none, which was disappointing. And I think the highest that we've come on this ranking is somewhere around 33 or 35 or maybe 36. It was Ravines, their Argot Singer Riesling, that was ranked that high. Weimer's been on the list. Forged Cellars has been on the list. Red Newt has been on the top 100 list. And probably a few others. So Wine Spectator, normally a subscription only service to read it digitally online. But for these several weeks, maybe the month of December, they waive the subscription and you can access their website for free. And you can actually go back and research those top 100s if you want the last, 20 years or something. Maybe they have a lot of them up there. And they've already released the top 10 for 2020, and there are no Finger Lakes in the top 10. But I think at some point we will be in the top 10, not this year. And I wasn't expecting to be in the top 10, but always hopeful that I'm hoping we'll have two wines in the top 100. That will be released on Monday. Sometime around noon, probably, I think, that comes out. And so we'll talk about more on the wine show tomorrow. But just a heads up to look out for Finger Lakes posts about, hopefully, several wineries, or at least one on that list on Monday. And the quality of the wines is fantastic, and there certainly is excitement about what's being made in the Finger Lakes around the world. The other thing I look for on that Wine Spectator list, we'll mention more tomorrow, are some of the winemakers who are making wine in the Finger Lakes from the international winemakers like Louis Barol, who is one of the partners behind Forged Cellars. He has Chateau St. Côme, which looks like Cosme, C-O-S-M-E, Chateau St. Côme in Gigondas in France. Always look to see if some of his wines are there. And, of course, Paul Hobbs, both his Sonoma winery and also Argentinian winery where he makes Malbec. Will any of those be on the top 100 list? And both of those wineries have been in the top 10 in other listings previous years. But looking for them in the top 100. So that'll come out on Monday. Also, there was a post, maybe from Penn State, about the spotted lanternfly and the use of dogs to sniff out the egg masses that the spotted lanternfly lays in the fall, and German Shepherds in particular. And they talked about the fact that this was perhaps most useful, most important on the fringes of the infestations. And there are parts of Pennsylvania where the dog would go dizzy because there's so many of these egg clusters. And we want to avoid that in our future. So we need to be scouting for them. But they're very, very hard to see. And there are already some that were found in Ithaca, which is this past fall, which is terrible news. Actually, they're found last month in November in the Fall Creek neighborhood of of Ithaca. And if you read more about them, and they finally posted the webinar that was about the spotted lantern fly. It was early November, or first couple weeks of November, one of the most recent really serious explorations of this spotted lantern fly. If you want the link to that, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Very sobering, because it paints a very pessimistic picture of controlling this insect, much less keeping it out of the Finger Lakes. And within days of that webinar, it was discovered that there are egg masses in some trees in Ithaca. So this most recent post about the German shepherds that seem to be pretty good at sniffing out these egg masses. The question that wasn't addressed in the article is how high in the tree can they smell them? Because a lot of these egg masses are 30 to 60 feet high in trees. And then how do we get to those egg masses? We need little tiny drones that can sniff them out, scrape them off, and move on to the next up in the canopies of these trees. But it costs about $35,000 to train a German shepherd to do this. I shared the post on Facebook and said, you know, that $35,000 is going to look really cheap a few years from now when these spotted lantern flies, if they do overrun our area. Pennsylvania has lost millions of dollars in their vineyards, and that damage is really just beginning. So if you want any of the links or more details, send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. Of course, you know, you can train this dog, and the German shepherds are incredibly smart dogs, often used as police dogs and drug sniffing dogs. There's dogs that can, I think, being used to detect cancer. There's so many fascinating ways that these dogs can be used as collaborators in but the article said, you know, they're working dogs. They don't just like lying around for days. They want to be out working. And so it's not just the money to train the dog. It's actually pretty much hiring a full-time person to work with the dog and to do the scouting. And then, of course, you find the trees that these are on, and then you got to find some way to get rid of these egg masses. If you just cut the trees down, then these egg masses will, some of them will probably get knocked off, to partly at least, as they fall down. And some of them might be on some very big trees, which are going to be very hard to take down in the forest. You could send someone to climb up the tree, but you know, that's another person, unless the one who works with the dog is also a tree climber. And you don't want someone climbing 60 feet up into a tree without spotters and, you know, without someone else there. So this does become a fairly expensive operation. But these dogs could also be used to, more at ground level, egg masses that were closer to the ground, narrowing down maybe which trees have them, and also looking at a nursery stock and cars and trucks and trains, trying to detect egg masses that would then be transported elsewhere and hatch. So these German shepherds are maybe more likely to be used for quarantine areas that are trying to send nursery stock or wood or stone or something else by truck or train out of quarantine zones. So don't know if we'll see them in our area, but And I think I posted that I have a border collie who is mix, part husky too, which is more interested in herding things than it is sniffing them out. So I'm not sure I could train a border collie, which is a very smart dog, but it is definitely focused on herding. It'll try to bite our feet or our shows, not really bite them, but sort of nip them, you know, like it would do if it was herding sheep. I mean, it's kind of fascinating to see how ingrained this behavior is in the dog. You know, herding them together to protect them. Someone comes in our house, or if I come in our house, doesn't matter. It's, you know, a family member comes in the house, the dog will try and go and herd the other family members in the house. And it gets a little annoying, kind of funny in some ways too. And, but I'm not sure my dog's going to be interested in looking for egg masses. If I gave it an apple every time it found an egg mass, it might become more interested because it really loves apples. But, you know, this is a potential way to help keep this pest at bay in the Finger Lakes. Just got to find a way to do it and the money to do it before we become a zone of infestation. This pest is a huge potential problem for the Finger Lakes. So again, if you want details on anything you heard me mention, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com. I was out at Herd Orchards this week and also stopped at Kirby's Farm Market, which is also on Route 104. And there were some brochures titled Ride the Ridge West with a variety of stores and things that are in here. Those include some in Spencerport. There's Willow Creek Antiques and Interiors, and also American Accents, which is also Spencerport. Circle B Western Wear, which is a large store. It says the largest selection of Western wear that is still made in the United States. And that's in Brockport on Route 104. And of course, Kirby's, which is just west of Brockport, and Herd Orchards, which is a few hundred yards west of Kirby's. And then Tillman's Village Inn, which is in Albion on Route 104. It's old-time place of five generations. Actually, the building it says the last of the historic stagecoach stops, established in 1824. And they have motel rooms as well as serving food at Tillman's. Not sure what their schedule is during this pandemic, but they are one of the stops on Ridge Road. And Amy McComber was describing, at Herd Orchards, was describing a long time ago, people used to go ridging. They would go shop and visit the markets and the stores and the farm stands along Ridge Road and buy bushels of apples and, you know, just kind of just stock up on food things, but also visit some of the stores and restaurants, places like Tillman's. And so it was fun. I hadn't seen this brochure before, Ride the Ridge West. Again, a number of stops along Ridge Road, and a kind of full page details about each of them. And Herd Orchards is open on Sundays this holiday season, this Sunday, tomorrow, and next Sunday. But Wednesday through Saturday are probably their preferred times that you visit. They have more staff Wednesday through Saturday. And you can shop online and order things. But fun to go out and pick up a pie. And they do have frozen pies, frozen apple pies, so you could bake that later, some point this winter, might get a few of them to stockpile them. The crusts are outrageously good, and they make a lot of different kinds of pies. In fact, for Christmas, they have a long list of pies. You do need to pre-order these, and frankly, if you know how much I like pie, you wouldn't be surprised. I'm tempted to order one of each, which would be a lot of pies, even if I froze them and kept them for the winter. But you know, next year I'm looking forward to some of their events that will come back. And they did one of a fall barn dance, and they had pretty much all the pies that they make for this barn dance. Never seen so many different ones in their at their tastings. They usually have a few for their Thanksgiving tasting or midsummer tasting, but this barn dance, they had tons of them. So again, you can get mincemeat, apple, raspberry, look like maybe 24 different kinds of pie, blueberry, raspberry, and tons more. So, but you do need to order in advance if you want to get those. Either for Christmas, you can also, if you're looking for a specific kind of pie, call them a couple days in advance before you go out to visit them. And they are set up very carefully all summer. Even pick your own. Wear masks. And one of the things the employees of Herd Orchards wear masks, and that's includes when they're out in the orchard or working, around their 1802 barn, or so they're asking their customers to wear masks, but they're also their staff is wearing them even when they're not interacting with customers, because they want to keep their staff safe, and they can't afford to lose their staff to get ill and not be able to work, have to quarantine. So they are being extra careful at Herd Orchards. And it's 11 to 3 that they're open, Wednesday through Sunday. But again, Wednesday through Saturday are their preferred times that you go out. You can also make an appointment, do some private shopping, and they're happy to do that. And they're also often there a little after 3. So if you can't get there right at 3, you're probably going to be just fine. I was there, got there at maybe 3:15. A couple days ago, and got one of their shortbread cookies with jam in the center of it, and that was just outrageously good. This past week, I went to a bakery in Manchester. I talked a little about the bakery on the food show in the previous hour, but also went to the Roundhouse in Manchester. And this is an abandoned building that was used for trains. It was it was one of the last ones remaining, I think, maybe even in the country. This is very unusual, and you can look it up online and read quite about it, a bit about it, see quite a few photos about it. So we stopped to check it out, and it's kind of like the abandoned subway in Rochester. Lots of graffiti inside. The building is not structurally, parts of it are not that sound. I would be very hesitant to go inside, I think. But check out Rock Wiki has some photos and some more details about it, what the Rock Wiki post said, there were some old railroad cars. Didn't see any of those, one of the reasons to stop and check it out is really just so you have more information, and the debate will be, whether to save it or not. And it's like 60,000 square feet. This is a massive half circle building that had rotating tracks in the center of it so that trains could go into any one of the many stalls to be repaired or whatever. It must have been fun to watch when it was operating. It would be amazing to turn it into a museum, and to have it maybe even a kind of a working museum. I think the Glenn Curtis Museum has a great model of operations where their volunteers and maybe even some paid staff work on some of the planes and refurbish them, get them ready for the museum. If there are accidents with any of the planes, they have people who can fix them. That's part of the future for this roundhouse in Manchester, or just a more of a static museum. But the expense to do that just looks extraordinary. So they're doing a $40,000 study to see whether it is worth saving. That was just announced a couple weeks ago, and it's one of the reasons it spurred me and also Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate to go out there. And he has posted some photos on Instagram, and we'll probably do a blog post at some point if he hasn't already about this roundhouse. So it's like a concrete and tile structure. It's really kind of unusual, as tiles are on the roof as well, but not the tiles that you think of with the ceramic roofing tiles. These are more structural tiles, and I have no idea what it would take to make this building safe and stabilize it, and then to upgrade it to a museum. How would that work in Manchester? I would love to see it happen. It's perhaps most likely to happen if there was a multimillionaire who was interested in it and decided to make it their pet project. I'm afraid I don't see funds available. I mean, the state is facing a monster budget deficit because the federal government, for some bizarre reason, feels that it's not necessary to help fund the pandemic efforts that states have made. I don't know how they figure states are going to pay for all the work that's gone into trying to control this pandemic for so many months. It's of course the Republican administration that I believe is they see this as a vehicle to force states to radically reduce their budgets. That's just my fairly cynical, but I think fairly accurate guess that there are people in the Republican Party who have for years thought that the states had budgets that were way too high and taxes that were way too high, and this, they can force them to go into bankruptcy or drastically reduce their spending by not helping to fund the efforts against this pandemic. It's, I think, unconscionable, and it's terribly disturbing. But I don't see funds for there would be millions of dollars to turn this roundhouse into a museum. So it'll be fascinating to see what the study says. If anything, I tend towards saving things, and so I'm a little reluctant to say I don't see how this one's going to be possible, but I'm glad they're studying it. I hope they can find a way to keep it up until someone decides that they want to put the money into it. At some point it becomes dangerous and I don't know what's going to happen with this roundhouse, but in general, I tend to support structures that we need to save. This was on one of the five to revive, and that was the Landmark Society of Western New York, and also the state landmark group has a seven to save list. It was on that list. It's now become one of the unique potential railroad destinations in the country. We have other railroad museums here. Perhaps it makes sense to you have a group, a critical mass that people can visit. Instead of just going to one museum, they find out that there's a museum in Medina, there's one in Rush, and then potentially one in Manchester. Maybe that spurs people to come make the trip and experience railroads here. And as I said a few minutes ago, maybe it becomes a working museum where, they really part of the structure, because it is so big, could be used to rehabilitate and restore trains. The Finger Lakes Railroad had some vintage cars and did some tours. That was a while ago. They haven't been running for a number of years now. There's been some holiday railroad tours in Victor, and maybe it was Victor, between Victor and Manchester. But again, this study is going to be done, and I'll be really interested to see what they find out, and what the costs are for this building. If you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. If you run into interesting stories and fascinating people, I'd love to hear about them. Again, you can email me anytime. Send me a photo, send me a menu, send me a wine list of place that is promoting local wines. And one final reminder, consider shipping some wines from our region, from New York State, to family and friends around the country. Get those off in the next few days, and I'll get them before the holidays, before Christmas. But also keep in mind that supporting local businesses in general is going to help our economy survive this pandemic as much as possible. And there are lots of great small businesses around. If you want some help finding something and you're not sure who would have it, email me, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back tomorrow with the Grapevine, and again, more details on that Wine Spectator Top 100. Michael Warren Thomas here. Have a great day. Email me, michael@saverlife.com.